Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop on Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Why are healthcare costs so high? Before we get into all the politics of the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare and Trump Care, I think it's a basic question, a fair question. Why are healthcare costs in the United States of America, why are they growing so fast? Is it the insurance companies? Is it hospitals? Is it doctors? Is it patients seeking too much health care? Is it the fact that the government runs part of it? Is it the fact that the government doesn't run enough of it? What's the problem here? What is going on? I know that when I have my health care, when I look at all the different policies, whether, and I've been on the individual market, currently I'm on the health care plan of the Virginia House of Delegates. I know that it's just really complicated. It's hard to understand. It's hard to follow. And, you know, I'm a pretty well-educated person. Healthcare is not my field, but it is something that is really complex for me. I know it's complex for many of you. And so this hour, I want to break it down in all its aspects. Of course, there's some politics here. Of course, we're going to talk about the Trump Care, and we're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act and single payer and how other countries do it and how we do it and how we've done it and doctors and hospitals and patients. But mostly we're just going to try to get into the details of it. I'm not calling with a specific answer in mind. I obviously have my own views on it. You probably know what they are. I think that single payer works in other countries and it should work in America. So that's my a priori. I admit my bias. You got it right here at the top. But the reason that I've asked Stephen Boyland, who is an employee benefits consultant, to come on the line, is that Stephen is uniquely aware of exactly what's going on in healthcare. He is in the weeds. If you think it's tough for you or me, Stephen deals with toughness every day. It's his job to get cheaper healthcare for all kinds of companies, from really small ones to really big ones. In fact, and I think he'd admit this, He actually profits from the difference between what companies should charge. When I say companies, I mean insurance companies. What companies should charge and what they do charge. And there's a wide gulf there. So, Stephen, you have a lot to say. We got a whole hour, and I'm really glad to have you here on the Inside Scoop.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark. I appreciate being on. I know you had me on once before on this topic.
And you did a great job. So before we get into the government and Obamacare and Trump Care and Affordable Care and all that kind of stuff, tell our listeners what you do. What do you do day to day, week to week, month to month?
All right, I represent employers. Employers, most of my clients have hundreds of employees, sometimes thousands of employees, and I work largely with my clients to help them get better. Better deals, essentially, from the insurance companies that they deal with. But a lot that goes into that also is dealing with claim costs from hospitals, doctors, pharmacies, and trying to control the underlying costs that are making up the expensive insurance costs.
Is it fair to say that you get a better deal than your average individual in the healthcare market because you can tell a healthcare insurance company, I can bring you 1,000 employees rather than just one person?
I wish that was the case.
Really? It's not.
This entire industry, including the one my subsegment, some people call us brokers, some people call us agents. I'm probably one of the few people that charges my clients directly. I don't take insurance commissions from the insurance companies. So there's an inherent conflict of interest in many parts of our healthcare system, but in the way healthcare is purchased, health insurance is purchased by employers and by individuals, there's an inherent conflict of interest going on.
Wait, when you say an inherent conflict of interest, be specific. What are you talking about?
Okay, so when most insurance people help a client out, they're getting paid by the insurance company to represent their client.
I see. So their goal is
from the insurance company.
So they make more money if they're, and I don't mean to pick on Aetna, it's just the first one that came to my mind. If they work for Aetna and they steer you toward Aetna, they make more money than if Travelers or, I don't know, Kaiser is cheaper.
Right, but it's a little more subtle than that. They're independent brokers, so they're independent contractors, and they say they're unbiased, but they're getting paid lots of money and lots of bonus money from the different insurance companies to strike a deal with them. So it's kind of like walking into court and finding out from your defense attorney that your defense attorney is taking a commission from the prosecution. Who would you trust?
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Yeah, problem. And it's not a flat fee. It's commission-based and it's bonus-based. So there's lots of different bonuses that go into the compensation that agents and brokers get. And most of them are good people. I'm not trying to disparage them. But the whole system has been built since World War II. It's slowly and slightly every few years to get worse and worse where the conflicts of interest become greater and greater.
Is this the same structure that we have in car insurance and home insurance? And, I mean, is this just a natural sort of insurance structure in the United States?
You know, it might be to some degree, but you got to realize with healthcare, the expense is so much bigger and the commissions are so much bigger that you're talking about huge amounts of money. And early in my career, when I did accept commissions, I remember many times during renewal cycles, you know, insurance companies trying to fly me with ways to get my client to pay several hundred thousand dollars more per year by giving me things that wouldn't be reported on my on my compensation that the client would see.
Sounds like a kickback.
And I remember when that was happening early on in my career, I just became more and more incensed. And I kind of saw it also when I worked for the insurance companies. I thought I was very young at the time. I thought it was right. We pay these brokers money and we pay them bonuses to get them to sell our products. But it really does skew the entire marketplace. And people you think are truly representing you are really representing the other side of the coin. So it's not quite a...
So you are truly an independent
broker.
Not
quite an efficient market, to say the least.
At least you, for the last, I don't know, 5-10 years since, you don't take any kinds of commissions. You are purely independent.
That's correct.
And does that mean that you can save...
Part of...
And this is not a commercial for you, but does that mean you can save more money for your clients?
I think I can, because when insurance companies start negotiating and there's, you know, many millions of dollars on the line... they want to know who they have on the inside. Who's the shill on the inside? How can they ply them? How much other business have they done with them? You know, if I had done, you know, my agency has done $50 million worth of business with a particular insurance company and we're getting a $10 million bonus and, you know, they're trying to charge one of my clients several hundred thousand dollars more, they'd have quite a lot of leverage over me if I was taking those bonuses and those commissions from the insurance company.
So let me start with a kind of a bird's eye view of the insurance system in America. In the vast majority of industrialized countries, in fact, I think all except us, and that includes obviously, you know, the ones we might think of, the UK and France and Germany, the Netherlands. It also includes Australia and Japan and New Zealand and Israel and even Costa Rica. They have what we call single-payer healthcare system, where the government negotiates benefits, everyone pays into the system, everyone pays out. Basically, you're taken care of if you're sick by the single-paying system, and they don't even have private health insurance companies in most of these countries, except I think there are a few, like the Netherlands or Switzerland, where you can also buy healthcare insurance for sort of additional costs. Did I basically get that right? If I didn't, correct me, please.
I'm not an expert on that, but from what I understand in Europe, there is a private insurance market, but extremely tiny. You know, usually only the most well-off even consider doing something like that. Most people just get served from their, you know, their national healthcare system that all people are offered.
And in the United States, we, at least since World War II, I don't really know before World War II, but at least since World War II, we are primarily an employer-based healthcare system. In other words, and you'll have to give me the statistics, 70%, 75% of everyone with health care gets it from their employer? Maybe it's even higher than that.
It's a large number. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but Medicare and Medicaid are real big also.
Oh, of course,
of course.
The
problem with our system is that we have this mix of private and public pay, and they influence each other in all sorts of complex market ways that are difficult to figure out. and make it even, in my opinion, even less efficient than if one system could kind of do it all.
So how did the Affordable Care Act, which the Republicans derisively call Obamacare, how did it change the currently existing system in place?
Well, it changed the system in a few different ways. The biggest way it changed things, and I just kind of want to compare this a little bit to the 1990s when, you know, during the Clinton administration that they were talking about health care, even though they didn't pass anything. But it appears to me that whenever you put a big, bright spotlight on an industry, or at least on this particular industry, all the players start playing a little more fairly and honestly. And even at the end of the Clinton administration, when they kind of decided not to kind of go ahead with health care, they couldn't seem to pass it, you can kind of see healthcare inflation go way up. So when the spotlight is shown on this industry, it seems like all the players play a bit more honestly.
So what is the average? What is the average rate that healthcare costs go up a year right now in the United States?
During the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, nationally speaking, again, it's different from state to state. You might be seeing trends anywhere from 5, 6, 7%, maybe 6%. Over the last 8 years or so.
So since the Affordable Care Act's been passed, or since Obama's been president, more or less 5, 6, 7%. What were they when Bush was president?
During the previous 8 years, they were somewhere between 10 and 15%, depending on the year.
Wow.
So maybe 12 or 13%.
So they were double.
And again,
they increased it double the rate. Well, that's important. In fact, I want to make sure people understand this. They increased it double the rate under George Bush than under Barack Obama. Okay, how about under Bill Clinton prior to George Bush?
That's a real good question. I don't know those numbers off the top of my head, but if I had to guess, I would say in the early part of the years when they were talking a lot about health care, it got real low, maybe 4 or 5%. When I say real low, relative to what health care is.
Right, it's still higher than inflation. It's still,
yeah,
and we're going to talk about why
inflation.
It's so high in a minute.
And
you think
pretty
some
much during the good years it's double the rate of inflation. During the bad years it's 3, 4, 5 times the rate of inflation.
Wow. Okay, and I want to talk about why that is. I do have to take a break for a commercial break. Folks on Facebook, if you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. When conservatives attack, Mark Levin is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. My guest is Stephen Boylan. He's an employee benefits consultant. And if that sounds dry and boring, just remember, Stephen is between you and cheaper health care. So he has seen this market, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the ins and the outs. Stephen, starting with a bird's eye view, why are our healthcare costs so high? Is it hospitals, doctors, drugs? What is it? Insurance?
It's a little bit of everyone. Yes, it's a little bit of the way it's sold, which we talked about earlier. It's a little bit with the insurance companies. That all inflates the cost for sure. But the biggest cost inflator, in my opinion, is the reimbursement system. And the reimbursement system, I mean, to hospitals and pharmacies in particular, to doctors to some degree, but some doctors are underpaid, some are well overpaid.
Explain what you mean by the reimbursement system. What do you mean by that?
The billing system is extremely complicated in the United States.
That's for sure.
If you went into a doctor's office and asked them, how much does it cost to get your gallbladder removed? How much does it cost to get anything done? You will not get a straight answer. You will not get a price list. You'll have to come in there and spend, $300 on an office visit, and then maybe they'll tell you a particular cost for your particular procedure. And that's even largely negotiable. So if you don't negotiate that, you could hear costs 2-3 times higher than.
Can people really negotiate? No, this is important for people to understand. Can you walk into your doctor, and you need your gallbladder removed, and when the doctor says, after looking at your insurance, that's going to be $12,000, can you say, or frankly, could be $80,000, and then they get a bunch of insurance, whatever it is, can you say, you know what, doctor, I can't afford $12,000. I can afford $3,000. Can you actually do that? Like the bizarre?
You can do it, and I actually do it as a test case on pretty much everything I have to see how it goes. But you're at an inherent disadvantage. It's very complicated to how they bill. Most people have some form of insurance, whether it's private insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid. So, and the doctors won't get involved, by the way. It's their billing companies, third-party billing companies that they hire to try to maximize profits. You know, this is a free market system.
And that way you don't have to talk to Dr. X, who can lovingly treat you with a smile and good hands.
Exactly.
And your friend, you deal with billing company Y, who's a terrible, horrible, and it's really the same. It's good cop, bad cop, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of bureaucracy with the billing people that you're dealing with. Again, you're dealing with people. You're not dealing with the owner of the billing company. You're dealing with someone that's trained how to do what they do. The doctor has no idea of what they charge, and because
the doctor has no idea. No, wait, this is important. The doctor has no idea what they charge. Really?
That's right.
They don't even know. Nobody tells them.
A very different reimbursement from Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance, and many different private insurances at Cigna and Blue Cross Blue Shield. They all have different reimbursement rates. Almost all doctors get completely out of the billing area. And I have many doctor friends. None of them know what they bill. Once in a while, I get them to look something up for me, and they kind of get a little surprised themselves. But if you ask them what their charges are, they would have no idea.
Can you actually go outside the insurance system? I mean, listen, there's still a number of people in America that don't have insurance. Mostly in states, frankly, that haven't done Medicaid expansion on the Affordable Care Act. And usually when you don't have insurance, the prices are crazy. You know, $100 for a bottle of aspirin or something ridiculous. Can you go in and say, doc, I'm just not going to do this unless you give me this price?
Yes, you can do it, but it's very difficult to do. And again, the doctor's not going to want to get involved. He'll tell you to talk to his billing company, or if you tell him you're broke, you'll have a much better chance of them being a little bit more amenable, especially if you do it before you have the
sure.
Test.
After the surgery, you're kind of stuck.
If you're trying to do it over the phone, and if they're trying to do it over the phone and they don't know you, and you're not going in there for that $300 office visit, you're not going to get anywhere over the phone with the reception or the billing people that don't know you.
I also find I don't get anywhere with the insurance company. I'll just give you a recent example that happened 3 days ago. My health care plan for the Virginia House of Delegates was rolling over. I was in the open enrollment period, and I was trying to decide whether or not to get dental care. And I know what dental care I need. I know, how often I go to the dentist and how often I get x-rays. It's actually much, much, much simpler than, all the things that are involved in health care. And I called the dental insurance company, and I said, look, this will determine whether or not I do open enrollment. I'm trying to figure out, periodontal care, what you do. She couldn't tell me on the phone. She's like, well, look to the website. I said, I went on your website. You describe generally, but you don't describe the specific thing. This doctor gave me this drug for my gums. And she's like, oh, well, we can't tell you that. And I said, well, if you can't tell me that, I'm not going to use your services. And she didn't really care. She was some bureaucrat. And so I guess I'll pay out of pocket just to determine what the actual costs are. It's a very strange system. Stefan, I need to take one more commercial break. We'll be taking a couple more. Folks, if you want to call in and share your story and actually get some answers, free answers from a guy who charges a lot of money for his services, call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Schooling the GOP, one hand tied behind his back, the Constitution in the other. It's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. My guest is Stefan Boylan. He is an employee benefits consultant. It is his job to determine what the healthcare costs are in America. He is on the front lines of why healthcare costs are so expensive. There was an article in Time magazine, Newsweek, 3 years ago or so, by another Stefan Brill, who really wrote one of the the seminal pieces, I would say. I think it was Newsweek, could have been Time. I do remember it was the only one that had a full magazine with nothing but this one topic. And in that article, Stephen Brill, which you could still, I think, get online for $2 or so, it's well worth paying for, talks about why costs are so high. He talks about the secret book that the billers have, where they have sort of the real prices. And it's no one seems to know about this book. My guest, Stephen Boylan, has been talking about the fact that even doctors don't seem to know about this billing book. But the billing book is what determines your cost. And they will not tell you what their cost is. And I have gotten in argument after argument, because I've been on the individual market. I've been on all kinds of health insurance markets. And I've said, I need to know the cost for my drug. I take a cholesterol drug. You know, how much is it? And they won't tell me. And I said, well, I'm not going to get it if you don't tell me. And then they'll tell me, well, you'll find out the cost once you join our plan and then get your first bill. And I said, really? I said, if you go to a restaurant and you order a steak, would you accept that we're not going to tell you the cost until you've ordered the steak? Then you order the steak and they say, yes, great steak, right? I say, yes, it was a good steak. Great, $1,200, please. And you're like, I'm not going to pay $12 for a steak. Well, you ate the steak. Well, you wouldn't tell me the cost ahead of time. I don't know of any industry in the country that acts like this. Frankly, I think we need a lot more regulation. Now, obviously, I support single payer, but at least let us know what the costs are. So, Stephen, let me ask you this first question. Do we have any legal right as patients to know the costs of a procedure before we undergo it?
I've been trying to find that out for years as I go to doctors sometimes and ask these questions ahead of time. Do we have any legal right? I don't know what the true answer to that question is.
I don't think we do, honestly, because I think if we did, we'd know about it. If we had a patient's bill of rights, we'd know about it. Hey, politicians in the federal government, do a patient's bill of rights. In fact, you know what? I think I'm going to try this in Virginia. I am now committing myself. See, this is why we have these good discussions on the air. I'm going to try in Virginia, and I don't even know because this is really complicated stuff. But let me see if I can get a bill in Virginia that says you have a right to know the cost of a procedure before you undergo it. Boy, am I going to get a lot of pushback from healthcare on that.
I would like to see doctors and hospitals. Hospitals are even tougher to if a patient asks, to let their price list go out. Hey, this is what we charge for things.
And now, they'll tell you they don't let it out. And Stephen Brill's article says they don't let it out because if they let people know what they charge, then there'll be competition. And then other people will charge less. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, Coke and Pepsi let their charges be known. And sometimes I buy the other one. Yeah, because of competition. I do check Comcast versus Verizon. And yes, I do often buy the cheaper one. And I thought this, I mean, if you're not going to have health care for everyone, if you're not going to have Medicare for everyone, if you're not going to have a, dare I say the word, socialized healthcare system, and it really is going to be based on capitalism, why not have capitalism, competition? Seems like a fair question. Republicans should love it.
I could not agree with you more. I could not agree with you more.
All right.
Transparency is really big. If you're going to have a free market,
yeah,
you're going to have a lot of transparency.
If you believe in capitalism, Republicans, then why not support a free market in healthcare where you know the cost going in? Because a lot of surgery is elective. And you can choose to go to a different hospital. Now, what really scares me, Stephen, is emergency care. Because if you're having a heart attack, you call the ambulance. You don't get really to choose. You call 911. You don't really say, I'll take the ambulance that's going to charge me $100 rather than the one that's going to charge me $1,000 because, you know, you're having a heart attack right then. And then they're going to take you to the closest hospital, and they might do an emergency quintuple heart bypass surgery there that costs a quarter the rate of one at another hospital, but you don't really have a choice at that time, do you? Do you find that emergency care is more overpriced than ordinary care, or is it all just overpriced?
Yeah, I mean, this is not a common view, but I think emergency room care treatment is probably one of the most efficient ways to serve people, but it's the most overcharged way, so it looks like it's the most inefficient way. If we had clinics that were staffed 24/7 with three-hour waiting lists, you know, the doctors don't have to wait around for patients. People are constantly in that room going through, and they have lots of residents working there, which don't get paid quite as much. So the emergency room is the most unregulated place. You know, I have one short story. I sprained my wrist three months ago, and the urgent care center was closed. I found out later on it would have cost me $350 for everything at the urgent care center.
Okay.
The emergency room tried to charge me $3,000 just for walking in the door. The doctor spent 3 minutes with me, tried to charge me $600. And the radiologist was totally fair, I was totally shocked. They only charged me $26 for the x-ray, which I was totally fine.
And that's really the most important thing you needed, right? You needed an x-ray to see if your wrist was broken. That was what you needed.
That's right.
What did the doctor do in his 3 minutes or her 3 minutes?
Well, he tapped on my wrist and asked me if it hurt, if I could feel anything, and then said, let's take an x-ray and see what they say.
So, and literally it was only 3 minutes.
It was approximately 3 minutes. I didn't put him on a stopwatch.
I understand. And it was $600 is what he charged you?
Yeah, it was exactly $567.
Okay, so $600 for 3 minutes. Hold on. Wait, let me do a little math here. $600 for 3 minutes is $200 a minute. That's $12,000 an hour. That's a nice hourly wage.
What does that come out to per week?
$12,000 an hour at $2,000 a week is $24 million a week. And then let's see, by the year, again, a little bit more math here, $120 million a year. Not bad work if you can get it.
I think it's $12 million a year.
Did I miss a zero? All right, fair enough.
Yeah, but $480,000 a week, right, for looking at a sprained wrist. Simple, somewhat simple, you would think,
And telling you need an x-ray, and you could have told the doctor that. You could have walked in and said, I want an x-ray. and they want to charge you $3,000 for walking in the door. That's the minimum?
This was the worst crime of it. The hospital called me up 3 or 4 days after, and they said that my bill was just under $3,000, $2,800, just for walking in. That would include any of the other charges. There's independent doctors that come look at me that billed me separately, and radiologists and so forth. The radiologist didn't come in and see me. I guess they probably did it from their computer from home. But anyway, the point is the hospital said if I pay right away, they'll give me 20% off my bill.
So it'll only be $2,400.
I asked for an itemized bill, and this is common, by the way. I asked for an itemized bill, so they said it's their policy not to give out an itemized bill. So I told them it's my policy not to pay for bills I don't get a receipt for.
Uh-huh.
So they finally produced an itemized bill, and after some arguing, I told them that I never expected to pay more than $1,000 for this. They tried to charge me exactly $1,000. So, of course, I told them I wasn't going to pay $1,000, and this whole game is a charade. And I wound up paying in the end, about 4 weeks later, about $500 for the hospital. I'm still fighting with the doctor's office. The doctor's office told me that they don't take appeals, if you like that one.
Well, now, this is really interesting to me, and it's going to be interesting to our listeners because most of our listeners don't have, 99% of us, including me, don't have the experience negotiating. I mean, I've negotiated, in the Arab market in Jerusalem. I've done that. It sounds like it's a lot like that in the healthcare. I've never really negotiated with, a doctor before. Sounds like you won.
Again, the billing office, not the doctor themselves.
Okay, the billing office. But you basically told the billing office, I'm not paying more than $1,000. And let me tell you something. Let me tell you this, folks, as a litigator, as an ex-litigator, they ain't going to sue you over $3,000. And the reason they're not going to sue you over $3,000 is it costs too much to hire the attorneys. So when it's a relatively low cost, you actually can, they want to get anything out of you. You actually have more power, folks, than you think you have. If it's a $100,000 bill, now you're in trouble. Now they could hire an attorney. And but for small stuff, you showed, Stefan, I mean, you argued it down. Now, I guess they could put something bad on your credit report. They could do that.
They could try, but you got to dispute it. You just got to stay on top of every letter and every notice. You got to spend a little extra time and energy. And, a lot of people don't have the mental fortitude to kind of fight these things out.
Okay. Let me, I'll tell you what, let me take one last break. And when we come back, I want to go over some of the various solutions that have been offered by the government. Which ones you think can work at the state level and the federal level. And really just any ideas you have on how to get healthcare costs down. We'll be right back. Last chance to call in, folks, 888-488-MARK, right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. is a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal America. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just talking about why healthcare costs are so high with my guest, employee benefits consultant, Stefan Boylan. Stefan, we were talking before the break. Hospitals take a cut. The doctors take a cut. And do the hospitals know what they're charging, or do they also leave it to the biller to just sort of make up prices?
Hospitals hire people that are billing specialists to go to school for this. I think it takes them a year or two to learn how the billing system works. It's very complicated. If you ever looked at a hospital bill, if you went in for surgery and it's 100 pages long, good luck trying to decipher that. So they hire people. The system is set up in a way that encourages this kind of behavior. So I don't even want to demonize necessarily everyone that's involved in this. This is just something that's evolved over the last, since World War II, a little more and a little more over the decades, to where we have a system that kind of naturally progressed to this point where we're at today. That's insane.
And do you think
doesn't
that
make a lot of sense?
The lack of transparency rewards this behavior? Do you think our insurance system rewards this behavior? I mean, if I want to get my car fixed, I get a little bit of this with auto mechanics because they're like, we don't know what's wrong with it until we fix it. But I still can ask them to call me before they actually fix it, with an estimate. I mean, I realize the human body is complicated, but what causes this 100-page bill that nobody understands? What systemically, what in our system that we government officials could change causes this nastiness here?
I just think the way our system has been set up from the beginning, being one that was, partially based on an employer-based way of buying, health insurance with, tax-free or tax-preferred benefits that employers could buy. There's so many different complications in the system that kind of skew the whole marketplace, that if you're going to have a free market, but you got a million exceptions, it's going to be complicated as all heck. And the more complicated it is, the more middle people you have, like myself, that aren't delivering care, but are costing everyone money. So I think you need more transparency, one, but just as important as transparency, you got the transparency of the hospital's, charge master list. But if it's a 1,000 pages long, who's going to be able to figure that out?
Republicans,
you need simplicity.
Yeah,
you
Republicans
need
argue
right
that people should have a choice. But if your choice is between 1,000-page document and another 1,000-page document, that's effectively no choice at all. Because very few people, even if they read the 1,000 pages, will have the medical knowledge to understand it, particularly if you're, 93 and have an emergency procedure. So let me go back to sort of why this is the way it is. We have an employer-based healthcare system. It is tax-preferred. We do have Medicare. And one of the solutions that Democrats have offered is simply Medicare for all. Take our Medicare system and apply it to everyone. So let me ask you about Medicare. How does Medicare work, or how is it working? Because it ain't perfect either. How does it work compared to the private health care that you deal with?
If you just purely look at the cost of what Medicare pays for a procedure, or even Medicaid, it's far below what private insurance pays. So in other words, private insurance that you get through your employer, even though you might not see that it's costing you, your pay is probably less because it's costing so much money for your company to buy this insurance.
And that's because the government has power to negotiate for millions of people, hundreds of millions of people.
And they do it on medical and hospital for Medicare and Medicaid, but they do not do it on drug costs.
And the reason they don't do it on drug costs, by the way, and I know this because I worked for Barney Frank. I was in Congress at the time as a staffer, and we actually had a bill. And the bill came up, and the Republicans passed a bill to make it illegal for Medicare to negotiate down drug costs. So don't let anyone fool you. The Republicans say they want cheaper health care costs. They don't. They want to jack up rates. They voted for it, and they could easily vote to change it if they wanted to. I was there when that happened. I'm surprised most Americans don't even know it.
And every pharmaceutical company will support them on that. They want to keep the entrenched interests alive where they can let the free market, charge $600 for an EpiPen that, costs a few dollars to make.
Right. And that when it gets press, suddenly, boom, they can lower the cost 90%.
Yeah. This is a great way to see the change, but there's so many different things. You know, how many drugs are you going to put in the front page of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal every day, you know, every year?
So you've made my point, which is that Medicare is cheaper and that Medicare for all would save us a lot of money. That's what some people call single payer or government-run health care. It's what every other industrialized nation does. And by the way, look it up. They all spend way less than we do, most less than half of what we do, and they all live longer than we do. Everyone, even Canada, they live longer than we do. So I think they got something going on. But we didn't get this.
I want to add to this one point that's really important.
Okay.
When you go out and buy a TV set, no one's putting a gun to your head to go out and buy a TV today. You can go to different places. You can shop around online. You can go to individual stores and shop around. When you're buying health care, and remember, my employers, my clients have thousands of employees that some of them do come to me. Almost no one is in the mental state of mind to go shop this stuff around. Even if they were, even when I shop it around personally, I have extreme difficulties finding out anything of significance. So it's not a product like every other product you buy in society where it's just easy to go shop around. So if you are going to keep a free market, you better simplify it a heck of a lot more than most of the population could quickly understand and shop around on their own. And that's
fair
not
point.
Easy.
So we didn't get Medicare for all. We didn't even get a public option, which I and frankly most Democrats supported, which President Obama supported, but he couldn't get enough votes to get it through in the Affordable Care Act. The nice thing about the public option is it allows the government and all the private insurance companies to get involved together. And I remember what they argued at that time. The private insurance companies said, we can't compete with the federal government. The federal government will provide so much better health care at so much a cheaper cost. How are we going to pay all of our agents all this money if the government could do it so much more cheaply? They're going to outcompete us. To which I said, yeah, you're right. What's the problem? But, to me, the public option would have led inexorably.
They would like a non-competitive market that we have today, where they can maximize their profit.
Right. So I think the public option would have led to Medicare for all. I think the Republicans knew that. I think the insurance companies knew that, and that's why they fought it. We didn't get that. What we did get is a plan that began with the Heritage Foundation. They implemented it in Massachusetts. It was called Romney Care, I guess, by Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. President Obama took it. It was really the conservative solution. Now, it's still, I think, better than no solution. But, the Affordable Care Act is not some liberal dream. It's actually a moderate proposal that the conservatives first proposed. Let me ask you, this is the great question that Trump brings up all the time. Is the Affordable Care Act succeeding? And if so, where is it? If not, where is it failing?
Oh, well, I could argue from both points of view, but let me argue from my point of view, which is you got 20 more million people insured. So you got to figure that's positive, and most people would look at it that way. You also have health care inflation over the last 8 years. I would argue more that it's because Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act put a spotlight on these costs. Maybe the policies themselves weren't the most efficient policies, which that could be changed. But healthcare inflation has come down over the last 8 years. It's still double the rate of inflation, but it's not triple or quadruple or five times like it was the previous 8 years.
And let me ask you one more thing about it, because Virginia, for example, doesn't have Medicaid expansion. New York does. Mm-hmm. Several states have their own exchanges. How does not just the national rate, but take it out locally, state by state, how does, for example, states that have accepted Medicaid expansion or have their own plans compare with states like mine, Virginia, that refuse to do it?
Well, I'll speak of two big ones. The ones I know best is California and New York, and those are pretty big states. New York, when they passed the Affordable Care Act, I've never seen this mentioned in the news, but I personally have lived in New York for a lot of years, bought my health insurance through them.
Got to hurry up because we're running out of time. Real quick. Go ahead.
Sure. The insurance was over $1,000 a month. Now it's somewhere around $350 a month in the state of New York.
Your insurance went down two-thirds?
New York is going up 5 or 6%, a whole lot less than 10%.
I'm afraid we're out of time, Stefan. We're going to have to continue and do this some more another day. But listen up, Virginians. You want to know where your Medicaid expansion money is going? It's going to New York. Stefan Boylan, I cannot thank you enough for giving me your expertise. Like I said, time went very fast. We're going to have to do this again sometime. Hope you enjoyed the show, folks.